The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Before we start today's show, it's time for this week's Bubble Genius Showcase Item of the Week. April is Stoners and Mothers Month at BubbleGenius.com. Head on over to Bubble Genius and pick up their Peace, Love, and Happiness soap set. Use the cucumber-scented peace sign soap when you want to feel calm and peaceful, the rose-scented heart soap when you want to feel the love and pamper yourself, and get happy with their zingy grapefruit-scented smiley face soap. Three soaps, 3 cents, three different feelings. Only $10 at BubbleGenius.com, but if you use our promo code Bob and Chez, that's B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-Z, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let's start the damn show.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Sir, we have a policy on this airline that a bag is this large.
Okay, you know what?
Take it.
Just put me a little paws off of my bag, okay? It's not like I have a bomb in here. It's not like I want to blow up the plane.
Sir!
I just want to stow my bag according to your safety regulations.
Sir!
Hey,
sir!
If you would take a second and take a little sticks out of your head, clean out your ears, and maybe you would see that I'm a person who has feelings, and all I have to do is do what I want to do, and all I want to do is hold on to my bag and not listen to you. And that the only way that I would ever let go of my bag would be if you came over here right now and tried to pry it from my dead lifeless fingers, okay? If you can get it from my kung fu grip, then you can come and have it, okay? Otherwise, step off, bitch.
Where's the plane?
We're having fun because we're number one, and the part that makes us smile.
Where's the plane?
Is making friends all around the world, singing up and down the dial.
Where's the plane?
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Where's the plane?
Oh, it is Thursday, April 14, 2016, and this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. I'm Bob Seska, and that's Chez Pazienza sitting right there on the plane.
Where's the plane?
I'm so sad, Bob. I'm so, so sad.
You're sad.
Yeah, it's been a very harrowing 24 hours for me. It has. It's just so sad.
Do we need to replace the theme music with more appropriate theme music? Is that what we got to do? We got to bring
just,
up.
I'm a man who has feelings, Bob. Yeah. I have feelings. I can be hurt, and 1,000 fucking idiots yelling at me on Twitter. Well, it kind of hurts me.
Yeah, you've had an exciting few days, haven't you?
Just, yeah, it feels like a few days. It's only been 24 hours.
And it's all because of this.
Where's the plane?
Yep.
So, yes.
I failed to give credence to the fact that the louder Cenk yells, the faster planes arrive.
That's right.
From now on, I'm going to do that whenever I go to an airport. Even if the plane isn't late, I just want it to get there early. I'm just going to start yelling.
Yeah, for God's sake, if your plane is ever late, this is the best way to get that goddamn plane to land on the on the runway and pull right up to the jetway. It's just to incoherently be screaming,
"Where's the plane? Where's the plane? Where's the plane? Where's the plane?"
Right? Just do that. In fact, you could just sample it from our show, put it on your phone as like a ringtone, and then anytime there's some sort of shenanigans at the airport, just start screaming,
"Where's the plane?"
Because, you know, that always gets you everywhere. You know, yelling and shouting and making a scene in a public place always works out so well for the shouter.
Where's the plane?
God. All right. Well,
again, that metaphor. I can definitely see Cenk being the kind of guy who just pounds away at that elevator button. Why isn't the elevator here? Where's the elevator? Where's the elevator? Where's the elevator? Boom, boom, boom. Just keeps hitting it.
Don't you know who I am? I'm from the Young Turks.
Don't say it. Say what I said.
Oh, that's right.
Don't say that there are people on this planet who haven't heard of the Young Turks.
And of course,
because Anna Kasparian will, you know, loop you in on a tweet and cause hell to rain down on you as all the Bernie Sandersites just invade your Twitter space.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what we're talking about right now. In case you're just joining us this week, is obviously, somewhat the Young Turks team was talking about you on their show. There was some sort of, I don't know, wasn't on the show. I can't find it on the show, but at some point
I heard somebody talk. Somebody said that they were talking about it at some point. I don't know exactly where, honestly.
So the Young Turks podcast, they evidently, from what I can tell, they start at like 6 o'clock in the morning. And their podcast doesn't end until 6 o'clock in the morning the next day. It just seems like it's an ongoing podcast that never ends. And at some point in that long marathon podcast, I believe it was Tuesday or maybe Wednesday when it happened, they started firing off against you and what you wrote in the Daily Banter. And we think to a certain extent what we said on the show on Tuesday.
Well, it has to be, because I didn't say anything like what Anna Kasparian of the Young Turks fired off on Twitter yesterday was that I had said that no one knows who the Young Turks are and that Cenk is a douche. Yes, I did say Cenk is a douche, because Cenk is a douche.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, though, and this is not something I put in the piece, it's something that I said here on Tuesday. I said that I didn't say that no one has ever heard of the Young Turks, because that would be a fucking stupid thing to say.
Right.
Since obviously they're very popular. What I said was, most people, if you take people outside of the realm of politics, partisan politics, especially, and you walk up to any idiot on the street and you say, who are the Young Turks? That person's going to go, huh? And the context in which I was saying that was because here's Cenk yelling at this 50-something guy behind a counter at American Airlines.
Where's the plane?
Yeah, and there's no freaking way that guy had any idea who Cenk Uygur was.
Right, of course not.
He could have said, I'm with the Young Turks, and he would have said, okay.
Yeah. Instead, he says, well, there's just some man standing here just screaming.
Where's the plane? Where's the plane?
You know what shocked me, though? What shocked me is that I genuinely don't want to, like, have it devolve into this. But what shocked me was what a wonderful little sort of metaphor for the sort of Bernie bros it was, the people who came at me, because there was this whole bubble about how everybody knows who the Young Turks are. Everybody.
Right.
And I'm like, no, well, you live in a fucking bubble if you think that everybody knows who the Young Turks are. And by the way, I don't say that as an insult to the Young Turks.
No, no.
There are people, obviously nobody knows who the hell I am, and there are people who don't know what the number one song in the country is right now.
Yeah, exactly.
This is how fragmented we are in terms of our media. There are no big cultural touchstones. You know, we're not living in the 1960s or 70s anymore when you can say, you know who Johnny Carson is? Oh, hell yeah. Of course I know who Johnny Carson is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, to a certain extent, there are people in the United States who don't know who the vice president is. I mean, that was my point.
I said most people, and when I said most people, I meant people out in the real world, not people like us who are plugged into politics 24/7 until our freaking heads explode.
Exactly. Yeah, and this is it. There are lots of people who are well known in the circles in which we travel, which is basically political internet. And so, yeah, I mean, no one's denying that the Young Turks is popular. I mean, the Young Turks, it's a very, very popular show.
Absolutely.
Maybe the most popular 24-hour-a-day-long show that's in the history of podcasting.
Oh, as far as I know, it is, because I was regaled with that like a billion times. The other thing I got a lot of was I got a lot of people saying that comparing like Twitter followers as currency.
Yeah.
You know, I got the, well, Anna Kasparian has 100,000 and something Twitter followers, and I have like, you know, 3,900 or something like
that's
that.
That's right. Yeah.
Which, by the way, something, God, I can't stress this enough. Something you know me, I've never given a crap about.
No.
I'm rarely even on Twitter. It's shocking to me that I bothered to defend myself yesterday.
Well, look, I mean, the idea is that, well, just because you only have 3,000 followers on Twitter means that your opinion is not valid, which is nonsense.
Yeah, which is like saying that Justin Bieber's music is the best thing on earth because he has sold millions and millions and millions of records, as opposed to, you know, American Music Club in the 90s, who sold like two records, but were fucking amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fact of the matter is, just overall, this podcast is basically neck and neck with the Young Turks when it comes to iTunes and some of the other platforms where where all the political podcasts originate.
But we don't have their presence on YouTube, which is absolutely, my God, I don't take anything away from them. I am taking nothing away from them.
The difference is we didn't have an international cable news television show for a certain length of time, first on MSNBC and then on Current. That just didn't.
Yeah, and nobody gave us $4 million seed money.
Exactly.
Because if they did, seriously, I would be surrounded by hookers right now.
So basically, just to recap, if you missed Tuesday's show, we talked about how Cenk Uygur from the Young Turks made a big scene at LAX because his flight was delayed, and instead of going through normal channels complaining to customer service or whatever, he started basically like this riot at the gate in which he's just incoherently shouting at the American Airlines employees there, just keep
"Where's the plane?"
that over and over and over again.
He posted it as a series of Facebook streams.
Facebook live streams, which is
the thing that bothered me most about it, because I would look at that kind of behavior, and I would think it's embarrassing.
Right. And then you wrote about it.
But instead of him being embarrassed by it and thinking, God, you know what, I'm losing my cool here and acting like an
yeah.
He's just like, everybody needs to see this. Well, look at the injustice, and look at how I'm reacting to it, standing up to the man. Ah.
It's just what irritated me about it is the same thing that irritates me about the far left, just in general. And you know, it's funny. I always have to preface by saying this. For the longest goddamn time, until a couple of years ago, I thought I was far left. I thought I was like, I mean, between the fact that I once owned three Priuses, for God's sake, that, you know, I once thought I was like the king of all liberals. And then I start to see this faction emerge on the far left that is completely, I don't even know who these people are. I mean, it's basically like, as far as I'm concerned, it's basically like the liberal version of the Tea Party.
I got a lot of the people who came for me yesterday, as they say on Twitter. A lot of them had like avatars of Che.
Right.
And like with names like Trotsky.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, really? Can you maybe be just a little more original there?
I mean, the people who've been following along with this show kind of know the evolution of how all of this has come about. And again, the point being that Cenk was basically behaving in keeping with that particular group. And it started with me being dissatisfied with the Occupy Wall Street people, because I thought, look, for God's sake, Wall Street needs to be punished. There needs to be some sort of popular groundswell, a movement to hold them accountable. And this is what we got.
This is too important for anarchists covering their faces in drum circles.
Exactly.
Leaderless movements, because no leaders, no masters.
I mean, it was just they violated every rule down the line. It's not like they broke the rules. They just didn't have any rules whatsoever. There was no central leadership. There was no rapid response. There was no message of demands. And all you need to know, if the Tea Party was sort of the conservative reaction to the Great Recession, Occupy Wall Street was the liberal reaction to the Great Recession. Now calculate how many Tea Party members of Congress there are versus how many Occupy Wall Street members of Congress there are today.
The guy leading the quote unquote revolution for them has been in Congress for 25 years. And during his time there has done nothing. Nothing in terms of fomenting this big revolution he's trying to lead right now.
So when we see Cenk Uygur raising a big stink for the benefit of his Facebook people on, at the American Airlines gate at LAX, and acting entitled and demanding to have everything done his way, and
it's that lying son of a bitch Johnson.
Exactly. It just screams out that kind of behavior where everyone seems like they're entitled to something that they're not entitled to.
And you know what? It's really funny. It's really funny that you use that term, sort of leading. I don't know if he was leading. I don't. But he's certainly loud enough. And I know he mentioned in his videos at one point that it was him and like another guy or something like that. But can you imagine being like, let's say you're on the Titanic.
Yeah.
And the Titanic is going down. Mm-hmm. Or some other disaster. You're on an island.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how quickly Cenk Uygur would step up and try to be the leader?
Yeah.
You know, the guy, I'm in charge.
He's in charge.
Now, come on, we gotta lead a rebellion, or we gotta just fucking shut up.
Yeah, how do we make a smoke signal to bring the airplane?
Where's the plane?
Right, bring the planes.
That's it, right.
Is his solution.
Yeah, if you're stranded on an island, all you gotta do is put him on the beach and he'll just shout, where's the plane?
Where's the plane?
That's right. Where's the plane? Why isn't it here yet? I'm Cenk. I'm in charge of this island, and I want to know where the goddamn plane is.
Where's the plane?
And so, therefore, it's going to come. I am going to make that rescue plane land and pick us up all off of this island. God damn it.
Even Bill O'Reilly has the good sense to do the whole we'll do it live spiel when he's actually on the air.
That's right.
Like, within the confines of his studio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Fucking thing sucks.
Exactly. So the reason I wanted to segue over to the failed Occupy movement, which then became sort of the same groups of people came over and became sort of the pro-Snowden movement. And we've seen how that's evolved over the years. But now the reason Cenk was traveling and the reason he's not on the show this week, on the Young Turks this week, is because he was first traveling to Miami and then didn't he go, he went to the... that protest on Capitol Hill. It was referred to as Democracy Spring.
Oh, for God's sake.
That was the
Jesus, the melodrama. God, right. They are so proud of themselves.
No. What they're trying to do is kind of co-opt the Arab Spring thing and make it into... And it wasn't anywhere near that.
When you compare the United States with what's going on in the Arabian countries...
Yeah.
In the Middle East.
Right.
Holy crap.
Well, the
oh my God, you spoiled children.
Right.
For thinking that what's really needed is to overthrow the whole country.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was the whole idea. The goal of the Democracy Spring protest was an occupation of the Capitol. That's how they kind of touted. This is going to be an occupation of the Capitol. Lasted for, I don't know, half an hour. A lot less time than the actual length of a Young Turks podcast. It's just a fraction, small fraction of that time. And I noticed, I saw some of the video of the protest, some of the march up to Capitol Hill, where they were going to occupy the U.S. Capitol building. And they were there was a series of chants going out, and the refrain in the chant was, "I believe that we will win," which to me was kind of telling. Because it wasn't like, oh no, we're going to win. It was a matter of just psyching yourself up to the idea of winning. And you wonder why is this the goal? I believe we will win.
What an awesomely powerful slogan that is. you know what? Honestly, we might.
I believe. But...
I think we'll be okay. I'm okay. You're okay. Welcome back to the 70s. It's okay. You know what?
I mean, the better refrain.
When do we want
been...
justice? When do we want it? Whatever.
Right. Yeah, maybe not. That would have been the slogan with the shruggy shoulder emoji. Maybe, yeah, right. Maybe not.
What do we want? You know what, honestly, whatever. Whenever you got the time. When do we want it? You know what, sometime next week is good.
Okay. Sometime next week. So that's basically the setup, and your Twitter battle was hysterical. So you got into it with all of the Young Turks listeners.
Yeah, you know how I feel about Twitter fights.
Yeah,
it's funny. I wrote years ago. I wrote a piece at the blog at Deus Ex Malcontent that was specifically designed. The only reason I wrote it was so that if somebody tried to loop me into a Twitter battle, I had something to send to them that was just basically like, you don't do Twitter fights.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were so many coming at me that I figured, all right, you know what, I got to kind of defend myself a little bit.
Right.
And, yeah, and I pointed out the obvious a couple of times, which is that I never said what Anna Kasparian said that I said. I didn't.
Yeah.
I've already said what I said, so I'm not going to reiterate that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just one after another of just – utter hostility and the usual condescension that you would expect. Yep. And you know what? Again, Twitter is not the place to have a debate anyway.
No.
It isn't. I'm not good at that. I'm going to be the first one to say it. I'm not good at being succinct. So it's definitely not the platform for me.
Yeah. Well, we're going to read some of these tweets after we talk about Harry's razors here. But what was really interesting about them is, and we're going to start with Anna Kasparian's tweet from the Young Turks and then go through some of my favorites. But the one that I wanted to talk about specifically has to do with a little bit of navel gazing. We're going to get to that right after we talk about Harry's, which are my favorite goddamn razors ever in the history of shaving razors. I've been fighting this battle for my entire adult life since I started shaving when I was, I don't know, 16 years old. I've been getting razor burn. I said, well, what the hell? And I originally thought, well, it's because I'm buying the El Cheapo razor blades, you know, the packs that you get with like a dozen razor, dozen plastic razors in there. And then I started buying the more expensive razors behind the glass cases and learning that those weren't much better at all. And then I discovered Harry's razors this year. And I'm like, wow, this is it. I found the razors. For the first time in my life, I defeated razor burn. I'm saving money on blades, and my face feels so much smoother after making the big switch to Harry's razors. Do what I and over a million others have done. Men and women make the switch to shaving products from Harrys.com. When the founders of Harry's saw the insanity of blade prices, they bought a factory in Germany that's been making precision blades for over a century. And now the blades go right from the factory to your door with no middleman. That's how Harry's took the sting out of blade prices. Now imagine getting the same great razors I use, three of those sweet five-blade cartridges, moisturizing shave cream, and more for just $15 with a money-back satisfaction guarantee. Stand up against overpriced store-bought blades in their protective glass display cases with Harry's razors. And don't forget, ladies, Harry's is perfect for your legs and armpits. Go to harrys.com, enter the promo code B-A-N-D-C. BNC for Bob and Chez for $5 off your first Harry shave. Plus, you'll be supporting the show by taking good care of your face or your legs with Harry's razors. That's HARRYS.com.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Okay, welcome back to our Thursday show. Thank you for joining us. Here's what Anna Kasparian from the Young Turks wrote on Twitter regarding Chez. She said, so Chez Pezienza said no one has heard of the Young Turks and that Cenk Uygur is a douche. Sounds like you, Chez. I found that funny since I had to Google who Chez is. All right.
And good, you should have to Google who I am. You shouldn't know who the hell I am.
I mean, that was basically like, there were a couple of elements of that. One was to directly counterattack against you, but the other one was obviously to bring out all of the Young Turk, you know, listeners to festoon your Twitter feed. Yeah.
Yes. Fly my monkeys.
That's right. Of course, there were the ones with six followers. I love this guy. I said,
You know what I actually did like before we even do? Yeah. There was one person who right off the bat, like one of the very first tweets I saw, responded to her and said, I notice you didn't defend the fact that he's a douche. Which I'm like, all right, that's good.
He might be, you know.
Oh, he's a total douche.
Maybe, maybe not. So this person wrote to you, Chez followers, 3925. Anna followers, 143,000. One host on the Young Turks has 36 times the followers Chez does.
Right.
And your response was, and you have six followers. So by your own metric, your opinion is worthless. So that was one of my favorite ones there. And then there was the one that referred to me as Bob something.
Bob's, I like that. We should change the name.
Yeah. I'm Bob something. That'll be easier to spell, at least.
Sure.
Someone tweeted, someone named Jamie Walsh tweeted, him and Bob something, I guess that's Chez and Bob something, have a podcast that was mildly entertaining until it became the anti-Bernie show.
Yeah, right.
that's not the case at all. But and you know, ridiculous that we actually talk about what's happening in the Democratic primary, you know, during a Democratic primary.
No, you know what it is? The thing I learned yesterday, well, it's not something I learned yesterday, but yesterday I think was the first time that I had to go in real time against a bunch of these people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, man, everything that that we've been saying, that I've been saying for this long time is absolutely true. These are people who just, you have to be feeling the burn 100%. And if you are not, that's it. You're fresh meat, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even that aside, I mean, the fact that they're defending Cenk Uygur after his airport behavior.
Yeah, that really is a little bit disturbing. I mean, regardless of what you think of me, and again, I can't stress enough, I never said that that no one's heard of the Young Turks.
But
that aside, like, you know, what Kasparian said aside, the entire idea that someone is looking at his screaming and shouting and acting like an angry baby and defending that is just, it's just shocking to me. And I got a lot of tweets that said, you know, he was standing up against the man. Like, oh, for sake. No, you know what? He was inconvenienced for a few hours. I get it. It sucks. We've all had to go through it. And it's really frustrating because we all wonder, why the hell am I paying money to do this when I'm going to get screwed over like this? But shouting and yelling just doesn't help.
Yeah.
It
and
just
you know what?
Does not. It, contrary to what Cenk seems to genuinely think, since he said it, he said, me and that other guy yelling, that's what got the plane there.
Yeah, no, it's not. No. God damn it. No, no. That's not how you behave. And again, that's
padding,
the overplay.
That's patting his own crappy behavior on the back.
Exactly. Exactly. There's a right way to behave, and then there's a completely wrong way to behave. And again, there's a broader aspect to all of this that I think we've covered quite thoroughly in the first segment of this show, as well as on Tuesday's show. So, I mean, we're not going to sit here and reiterate all the reasons why acting like a screaming mental patient at an airport is a bad idea. It should be obvious that this kind of rude, unacceptable behavior is completely counterproductive to anything that you might want. And it is, we live in a society where we go through normal channels to get things done. We don't stand there
in a society.
That's exactly, but it's true. I mean, that's not how you get things done. If this is how you got things done,
where's the plane?
By screaming that all the time, then there would be nothing getting done because everyone would just be a screaming lunatic.
Exactly.
It just doesn't work. So this is the other aspect of this, and it comes down to the content of this particular show, which is this Twitter fight that you had today. And it came down to a guy who, whenever someone really wants to cut the show down, what they usually do, and this is the standard operating procedure, they generally say, well, you used to be good, but you're not good anymore. Because, and the subtext is always, because you have this one opinion that I disagree with. Because we haven't successfully passed the purity test. And that's why the show is not funny to certain people anymore. So, like this guy, Doug Alford, tweeted to you. He said, what I'm saying is I went from laughing along with you guys to feeling put down and lectured to. Not much fun. Well, you know what? Not every topic is going to be fun. And we're not going to sit here, and we've never been the kind of show to sit around and candy coat or to wear kid gloves and to kind of walk people through in a genteel fashion.
As much as we want, you know, we subsist off of Patreon money from our listeners.
Yeah.
We cannot be jukeboxes.
No.
We are not a jukebox.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just put money into us and get exactly what you want. And one of the things about this is something I learned blogging forever ago. I started almost 10 years ago. Is that you have to, if you're someone who offends people, people have to understand, and people who gleefully sort of revel in your willingness to say what's on your mind, they have to understand that eventually you're going to offend them.
Yeah.
You will say something that they don't like. And the question then is whether or not they stick with you or they don't. And if they decide not to stick with you, there's nothing you can do about that.
I mean, the idea, and this is, I want to segue into actual news after I say this, but the actual idea of the show is to be entertaining as we talk about politics. Now, that doesn't always mean hilarious. Like, there's always some element of the show that is an attempt to be lighthearted about these more serious topics. But we're not going to be lighthearted about every topic. We're going to treat every topic as we see fit. Some topics deserve more seriousness. Other topics don't deserve any seriousness at all. And that's how we proceed through the show. And if you don't like being challenged, if you don't like being disagreed with on some things, then maybe this show isn't for you. Maybe you should find a show that passes all of your different various criteria for a show that agrees with every single one of your pet issues.
Right. But that's a wonderful little metaphor for what we're seeing from the far left now.
Exactly.
You're not going to find that. You're not going to find that unicorn where every single thing that somebody says to you is something you want to hear.
That's right.
And I think it's hugely important also. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about that before, about how we live in this world of sort of a la carte on-demand media where you can create this bubble around you of only stuff you want to hear. Mm-hmm. And as God is my witness, I think it's hugely important to hear stuff that is outside that bubble. So yeah, you know what? There will be, I promise you, there's going to be stuff that we say on the show that you'll love. Yeah. And there's going to be stuff that we say on the show that you'll probably hate.
And there will be some segments of the show that are deadly serious. If we're talking about civil rights, if we're talking about women's rights, if we're talking about reproductive rights or voter ID or the climate crisis, we're going to be more serious. We talk about Alex Jones and Fox News Channel. We're going to treat them the way they deserve to be treated, which is
right. But also, if we talk about politics, sometimes this is something I responded to that last tweet this morning. If we talk about politics, there are times when we'll laugh it up, but there are going to be plenty of times where we're serious, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because if you watch the mainstream media, and yes, believe it or not, for all this crap coming down on us from on high about how we're not far left enough, we're not the mainstream media. The thing about the mainstream media is you watch them and they're loving the horse race.
Yep.
And they treat politics as if there's no consequence to it, as if it's just, oh my God, you know what? We just love this boxing match here.
Yep.
And that's not the way it is. There are genuine consequences to who wins the presidency, to whether or not that person can put his or her agenda through, to what they're going to be up against, to who the people are, who the players are, how qualified they are, that kind of thing. That matters.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And by the same token, you know, there's part of us that's is like, we really love it when people love the show, but we don't, the sun doesn't rise and set on this show based upon making everyone happy. Because we couldn't do a show like that. There would be just no way to do a show in which we make everyone happy. It's a complete exercise in futility. You're never going to make everybody happy. So why not just present our opinions unfiltered and as they are? And sometimes that opinion is going to differ from yours listening in, and sometimes it's going to be perfectly in line with that. And so I think what you're getting from this show more than anything else is an honest assessment based on our experience and our knowledge and what we've done over the years, and presenting that for you in a way that's entertaining. And we hope we deliver, at least. But I mean, and because we're not as famous as Cenk Uygur, but I guess our opinion then is not valid, is it? No, I think it's plenty valid. And quite honestly, our podcast is doing just fine. Just fine. We're number four.
I'm fine.
Number 44 right now in news and politics on iTunes. That's pretty goddamn good, considering there are thousands of political podcasts out there. Being 44, sometimes as high as number 15 in iTunes news and politics, that's pretty good. I think we can successfully pat ourselves on the back for that one. And of course, for a little
podcast like ours, I think that's pretty damn good. Yeah.
All we want are the people who get it, and there are not hundreds of thousands of listeners of this show who get it. They get what we do. They get the sense of humor. They get the topic choices. They get the fact that they're not always going to agree with us 100% of the time. That's just part of the dynamic of the show. Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to piss off two groups of people. We're going to piss off both Bernie people and Hillary people in the next segment, because there's going to be a negative Bernie story, and then there's going to be a positive Bernie story. And at the end of the day,
as it should be.
As it should be. And at the end of the day, who knows? Everyone's going to hate us right after this. Hello, it's Bob to tell you about our Patreon page. You might be asking yourself, what the hell is a Patreon page? It's a website where you can help support our podcast by donating money to the show. You can sign up for $1, $5, $10, or $15 per month, or if you're filthy rich, you can sign up for more. In exchange, we'll bring you exclusive Patreon-only content like our post-mortem shows, memberships to the after party, and commercial-free, unbleeped versions of our free show. And if we reach our crowdfunding goal, we'll bring you new shows every weekday. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez, or click the Patreon link at bobseska.com. Let's do this thing.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Where's the play?
Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And the second half of today's show is brought to you by Amazon, the Amazon link, right? If you shop at Amazon.com, enter the site using our link just below the logo at BobSeska.com, and we get a small commission from everything you buy. It costs you nothing and helps support the show. Thanks in advance. Also, I thought Charles Johnson and I, Charles Johnson from Little Green Footballs and I, got the after party login situation squared away yesterday. I thought that happened. It ended up breaking again. I have no idea what the hell is going on with this, but you know, I've tried all of the things I can do as far as fixing this part of the website. And Charles Johnson, who's a certifiable coder. I mean, the guy's like knows how to. I mean, the guy basically programmed his entire site and basically made Little Green Footballs from scratch. So he knows what he's doing. He couldn't figure it out either, although he did temporarily fix it and it just went haywire again. So those of you trying to sign up at BobSeska.com for the after party, the best way to do it now is to just go to Patreon.com/Bob and Chez, sign up to listen to the after party there. It'll be uninterrupted. You can get everything and no fuss, no muss. All right, moving along now. So let's do, I'm going to give you the choice, Chez. Do you want to hear the pro-Bernie story or the anti-Bernie story first?
Let's hear the pro-Bernie story.
Okay, pro-Bernie story. Bernie Sanders said the other day that that voter ID laws are like Jim Crow laws. And Mediaite's Alex Griswold had a big issue with this. But see, the thing is, I agree with Bernie Sanders on this. Voter ID laws are exactly the new Jim Crow.
Yeah, I agree, Tim. Griswold is very, very conservative.
Yeah. Here's what,
which is not to say, by the way, that he actually doesn't make good points now and then.
Well, he's trolling here because he basically says, well, Bernie thinks that voter ID is like Jim Crow and black people don't think that.
Oh, OK. Yeah, that's kind of a mental.
Exactly. So, here's what Bernie said. He said, you would have thought that after all we've gone through as a country to make sure that people have the right to vote, regardless of the color of their skin, that these Republican governors would show some mercy and not try to bring us back to Jim Crow days. Well, yeah, that is absolutely true. And I think it's an appropriate comparison to make. I've certainly made that comparison. Eric Holder has made that comparison. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court didn't see it that way, which is awful and pathetic. But the thing that I found revealing here is that Alex Griswold from Mediaite rolled out all of these polls that some of them I've seen, some of them I hadn't seen. But basically, he said that the American people love voter ID. They want more voter ID. A 2015 Rasmussen poll found 71% of African Americans support voter ID laws. In 2012, 65% of African Americans in a Washington Post poll agreed that people should be, quote, required to show official government-issued photo identification before voting. A 2013 YouGov poll found that 58% of African Americans support voter ID. Right? Well, you know what? You think that could be because of the ongoing misinformation campaign in which the Republicans are referring to, you know, the need for voter ID as being this crucial bulwark against to thwart voter fraud? That's all you hear about.
The Republicans are the kings of creating both hysteria and solutions to things that aren't problems.
That's right. That's right. And of course,
you know, Sharia law. We need to fight Sharia law. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, we also need to ward off the aliens from Planet 10 coming through the eighth dimension.
Yeah, and don't forget the no-go zones. That was
the no-go zones. It's a great example.
Yeah.
They're terrific at phantom threats.
That's exactly right, and that's what they're doing here. And so no wonder a significant portion of the American people, including African Americans, including Latinos, support voter ID laws. Well, I guess voter fraud's a real issue. And then, of course, cable news and the Sunday shows and the traditional news media parrots all of that stuff and never really gets to the heart of the matter, which is that what's the voter fraud percent? 0.0000013, which is statistically non-existent. So, and the fact that it's a Jim Crow law is self-evident because one of the major Jim Crow laws in the Jim Crow post-Reconstruction era was the poll tax. And if you have to pay, or you know, if you have to pay for transportation, if you have to pay the government somehow to get an ID, if you have to lose work in order to get an ID, that by nature is costing you money, which is therefore a poll tax. It's not necessarily like the Jim Crow law, which made you actually pay money at the polling place in order to vote. This is a more ambiguous way of doing it, but you're still paying money in order to have the right to vote, which is by nature a poll tax, which is therefore in that Jim Crow zone. So it should be abundantly clear. And quite frankly, and this is albeit anecdotal, but African American people who I've talked to, who've written to me about voter ID, I haven't received any, like, any email or any tweet or any Facebook message that says, oh, you know what, voter ID, never mind, Bob. Voter ID is fine. Don't even worry about it. We're all okay. No African Americans being disenfranchised here. Not hearing from any African Americans saying that. Nobody is saying that. Right. Everybody who is plugged into the process knows that African Americans are being disenfranchised. They know that African Americans are being disenfranchised not only through voter ID, but also through voter purges. Where guys like Rick Scott go through and say, well, he looks like a crook. Get him off of there. And they purge, you know, in some cases, tens of thousands of people off of the voter rolls for no particular reason. So in that respect, Bernie Sanders spot effing on. And this, you know, the negative story isn't really about Bernie anyway. It's kind of, it's about this guy, this Dr. Paul Song. Who spoke at Bernie's rally in New York City. Huge turnout, about 27,000 people, according to the Talking Points memo.
Was that the final number?
I'm seeing 27,000, according to Talking Points memo, and that links to the New York Times.
Okay.
So I guess I've seen on Twitter some people referring to it as low as 11,000, but I'm going to stick with the New York Times estimate here and go with 27,000. So this is a huge rally. Barack Obama spoke in the same location 8 years ago, and I think it was 24,000. Certainly not indicative. I mean, Obama's, I think, largest crowd was 100,000 in St. Louis in 2008. But, I mean, it was Bernie outdid Barack Obama at this location at this similar period of time. So that's it's all kudos to him. But the fact of the matter is that this guy, this Dr. Paul Song, got up and spoke on behalf of Bernie as a surrogate and referred to Democratic whores who are beholden to big pharma and the private insurance industry. Oh, no, I'm sorry. There's more to it. Corporate Democratic whores who are beholden to big pharma and the private insurance industry, which was, I think, difficult to accept on several different levels. The whores thing, yeah.
Whores and prostitutes.
Yeah, it was partially
when you've just spent several minutes talking about a woman running for president of the United States, and you mention Democratic whores, probably not the best idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, the whores part is, shall we say, problematic. I think that's
that's actually a good use of the word for a change.
Yeah, but to me, the really problematic word, and this is not necessarily something that should be brutally offensive to me or to you, but the use of Democratic in there was interesting.
Because
you're
talking about Bernie is running as a Democrat.
He's running as a Democrat, and he's also trying to court Democratic, I mean, establishment Democratic superdelegates in order to win this thing. And so referring to, you know, the Democratic Big D as whores.
This is the thing that nobody understands. Yeah. I got regaled on Twitter yesterday with people saying there are only 251 delegates between Sanders and Clinton. Like,
that's right.
Oh, okay, that's very convenient if you're leaving out the superdelegates, and they do count, and they are going to throw in their lot with Clinton.
Yeah.
Because Bernie's not, you know, Bernie is not a Democrat. He has contempt for the Democratic Party. And yeah, you know what? You got his surrogate saying that they're whores.
Yeah, and in Bernie's defense, by the way, he tweeted shortly afterward. He said Dr. Song's comment was inappropriate and insensitive.
It was, and you know what? And Dr. Song there said that he was sorry, although his apology was kind of half-assed.
Yeah, and the reaction was interesting too, because it sounded like a mixture of cheering and some sort of. It sounded like there may have been even a little bit of booing in there too. I guess that maybe they were booing the Democrats.
I'm inclined to say yes.
But I mean, the fact that Bernie Sanders did come out and repudiate the remarks portends something positive insofar as that if Bernie Sanders is unable to secure the nomination here, that he will come out and do the conciliatory thing and make peace after California on June 7th.
I agree with you, but I think that what bothers me is that, you know, he said it's inappropriate and insensitive. He said there's no room for language like that in our political discourse. Brother, where the fuck have you been? You're the people who are basically your army online have engaged in nothing but that kind of venom and vitriol.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's Democratic whores is probably the least offensive thing that they've been lobbing at anyone they see as not 100% burn feeling.
Yeah. And for example,
where's the plane?
That.
Yeah.
That, for example. Okay. We're going to take one last break and come back with more show after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius. Doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
This is the Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Whores and prostitutes.
All right, welcome back to the Thursday show. Thank you for joining us. Speak of Texarkana, Ted Cruz of the great state of Texas doesn't think you have a constitutional right to sell or buy dildos. This is where this goddamn presidential campaign has brought us this week.
Yeah, this is you have no idea how badly I want to check out from all of this. On the one side, we have corporate whores and, you know, being yelled at and screamed at by the left-wing Tea Party. Mm-hmm. On the other side, you have the legitimate Tea Party who are completely off their fucking rocker.
That's right.
Candidates commenting on each other's wives, calling them ugly. This idiot talking about dildos. Donald Trump having people beat up.
Oh, yeah.
This whole thing can't end soon enough.
Yeah. So, I mean, just in brief, if you haven't seen the Ted Cruz dildo story, and of course, every time we bring up dildos on the show, we have to play this.
Strap on dildos. Dildo. Dildo. It's a penis. Artificial penis. Dildos. Dildo. Dildo. Damn dildo. Strap on dildos. Dildos.
Whores and prostitutes.
Well, we moved on from that, Jesse. Thank you. But Ted Cruz once opposed your right to purchase dildos and artificial vaginas when he was Solicitor General of the great state of Texas under Attorney General Greg Abbott, who is now the governor of the great state of Texas.
The insane governor. Jade Helm.
That's right, Governor Jade Helm. There was a case where this store, you know, was trying to sell sex toys, and they were told they could no longer do that, and they appealed their arrest for selling sex toys, and they used, of course, the 14th Amendment as their excuse, their right to privacy, as well as a Supreme Court ruling in Lawrence versus Texas, which overturned the state of Texas's ban on sodomy. By the way, there was once a sting operation in which Texas law enforcement was able to infiltrate what was referred to as a Tupperware party for dildos in someone's home. This was the priority for Texas law enforcement to weed out all of those subversive dildo retailers, right? So suffice to say, this one series or chain of adult stores were brought up on charges for violating this statute in Texas, and it went to the appeals court. And at that point in time, Ted Cruz and his staff, as a Solicitor General, had to compose a 76-page argument to present to the Court of Appeals in defense of the anti-dildo law. Amongst other arguments against selling the sex toys, Cruz wrote that the alleged right to sell dildos and artificial vaginas isn't, quote, deeply rooted in the nation's history and traditions. But I'm sure Ted Cruz will tell us that the founders absolutely had AR-15 assault rifles in mind when they authored the Second Amendment. So yeah, so the founders couldn't foresee the existence of dildos when they were authoring a right to privacy, but of course, you know, the AR-15s are just fine.
The entire idea of that. just seriously, let's just pause for a moment.
Yeah.
And think about how insanely invasive that is.
It really is.
From the party of small government.
Yeah.
These people actually concern themselves with whether or not you pleasure yourself.
Exactly.
Whether or not in the privacy of your own home, you as a woman are using a vibrator.
Yeah.
And by the way, I guarantee you, Heidi Cruz has a few.
Yeah, she has to.
I promise you that.
She has to.
I promise you that when Ted rolls his flabby f***ing ass over, his spineless, you know, jellyfish ass off of her, she rolls over and she has the rabbit.
Yeah, right.
She's got the one. It's got the special little ticklers for the. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but you get the point. And I say that with, honestly, with the utmost respect for Heidi Cruz.
That's right.
Because if she's married to that slob, she deserves to have a vibrator.
Yeah, I mean, if she's really in desperate need of an orgasm, all she has to do is shout,
"Where's the plane?"
And then there,
right, that's right, orgasm comes.
Orgasm right there.
I'm going to try that next time. See if that makes me come.
But I mean, the idea behind Ted Cruz's argument was not necessarily that you can't use a dildo or an artificial vagina in the privacy of your own home. It was about being able to buy and sell.
But it's
artificial
the same.
Vaginas.
I mean, it's the same thing. It is. I mean, it's still trying to put a stop to the commerce involved in dildo sales.
See, Cruz wrote in his appellate brief that Texas had an obligation to discourage, quote, prurient interests in sexual gratification, combating the commercial sale of sex and protecting minors. So basically what Ted Cruz tried to do is conflate selling dildos and artificial vaginas, or never leave out the existence of artificial vaginas, with the idea of prostitutes.
Right.
You know, whores and
whores and prostitutes.
Right. So he conflated those two things, where one is a battery operated appliance, the other is a woman who can be exploited and abused. These are not the same things by any stretch of the imagination.
He's like the uptight Bible thumping coach in like an 80s skin flick teen movie.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
He's Miss Ballbreaker from Porky's.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, he wrote here in this appellate brief is just like, it's like the manifesto that you would see written by the town villagers from Footloose or something like that.
Exactly.
It's like he writes here, there is no substantive due process right to stimulate one's genitals for non-medical purposes unrelated to procreation or outside of an interpersonal relationship.
That's insane. That is just insane. Dear God, that is the most fundamental right there is.
Yes. God
that
damn
is
it.
Absolutely a fundamental right.
Yep.
To be able to do whatever the hell you want with your body.
Exactly. I mean, if stimulating.
I am masturbating right now. At this very
Jesus.
Moment.
Right.
I have, you know what? 90% of the time when you hear me zone out on this show, I pulled up Pornhub. And I'm going at it.
Well, here, I'll allow you to hold back your orgasm a little bit by playing this.
Where's the plane?
All right. But if stimulating one's genitals isn't enumerated in the Constitution, then you're not at liberty to do so, nor is anyone allowed to sell you a device that helps you in that endeavor. That is what Ted Cruz is writing.
That's insane. That's you hit it on the head. That's like a villager.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Right. And of course, this
is what they concern all the problems in the world over the past, you know, when did he do this? Years ago?
Yeah, this was 2007.
So this
was
in
ancient history. No,
think about all the problems going on in 2007.
It was like yesterday.
This is what that fucking smug prick is concerning himself with.
That's right. This doughy asexual guy is oh my God, we can't, people should not be allowed to have and purchase dildos for God's sake.
He's like another movie reference. He's like Jack Ripper. the general from Dr. Strangelove. Yeah. He has totally misconstrued the fact that he doesn't please women. He's, you know, Jack Ripper thought that it was fluoride in the water, and that's why he couldn't get off.
Yeah.
Well, Ted Cruz is like, you know what? Women are apparently not getting off on my penis, so I have to take it out on all dildos.
That's
anything
right.
that gets any woman off.
Yeah. I'm going to narrow it down back to my penis. We're going to eliminate all the possibilities for sexual gratification. So down to the 3 square inches in my bathing suit area where my penis is located. And then everyone will have to, by default, flock to my genitals.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. That's the only thing left that's legal in the state of Texas.
Right. Well, I mean, he lost the case. Ted Cruz and Greg Abbott lost the case, didn't appeal up to the Supreme Court afterwards. Probably good idea on their behalf, instead of having to go to the Supreme Court and argue against dildos and artificial vaginas. Maybe not the best career move, huh? But the judge actually ruled, quote, an individual who wants to legally use a safe sexual device during private intimate moments alone or with another person is unable to legally purchase a device in Texas, which heavily burdens a constitutional right. Yeah. Of course, that is the correct way to rule it. The court also concluded, quote, whatever one might think or believe about the use of these devices, government interference with their personal and private use violates the Constitution. Of course, that's exactly, I mean, you know what it is? You know what that is? That's the small government opinion. Yeah. That's, you know what? That should be the conservative argument. By definition, if you support small government, then you should support the government getting its nose out of people's artificial vaginas. I think that's the key to modern conservatism. Get your nose out of people's artificial vaginas. So dildos 1, freedom 1, Ted Cruz 0. Sorry. Okay, so I guess we got to wrap up the show. I didn't even forgot to start the closing music. I do that occasionally. I'm like, oh, let's just keep talking. But we have limited amounts of time here. Oh, by the way, we almost entirely forgot to talk about Trump's big gaffe of the day. Let's talk about that right now, shall we? Trump was speaking in Pennsylvania. Have you heard this? Have you heard the clip of audio yet, Chess?
I've heard it only once, and I was just, it made my brain come out of my ears.
Those of you who have been following the Paterno-Sandusky scandal from years ago will definitely appreciate this Trump clip from today.
I know a lot about Pennsylvania, and it's great. How's Joe Paterno? Are we going to bring that back, right? How about that whole deal?
How about that whole deal?
What the f- does that even mean?
I don't know. How about that whole deal?
How about that? What about Joe Paterno?
Joe Paterno, number one, is dead. Number two, resigned in disgrace. Number three was closely affiliated with a alleged sexual... Well, no, not alleged. I mean, he was convicted. Jerry Sandusky was convicted of sexually abusing minors. So bringing Joe Paterno back, first of all, will require a shovel and a lot of patience. I think Donald Trump's going to do like a weekend at Bernie's with Joe Paterno or something. Whatever he can do to win Pennsylvania. Whatever he has to do. Just not smart. That whole deal. That's what he's really concerned about. All right, the postmortem show is coming up next. If you want to listen to the postmortem show, all you got to do is go to patreon.com/Bob and Chez, sign up for $5 a month, and you get it. There it is, right there at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. For $10 a month, you get the postmortem show plus the after party, which will happen tomorrow. For $15 a month, you get the postmortem show, the after party, and a commercial-free, not-safe-for-work, unbleeped version of this show. It's a bargain at twice the price. We pass the savings along to you. Thanks for supporting the show at patreon.com, and the postmortem show is kind of up next. See you on the after party, folks. Bye-bye.
Whores and prostitutes.